He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
I think it's very hard to ever imagine that you would spend your time working on a Chinese language letterpress collection in New Zealand. Yeah, this is one of a kind. This is special.
Kia ora, this is Voices, and I am Kadandri Raghukumar.
So what we're looking at here, we're looking at pieces of metal type and this beautiful rectangular prism of metal is, in technical language, what we call a sort, or it's a character.
These are Chinese letter type faces cast in lead, part of the only surviving Chinese language printing collection in New Zealand. And that is Yawen Ho, who's brushing 30-year-old dust off them. Yawen's a poet and a researcher curator at Victoria University's Waipeata Press, where I'm meeting her today. We're sitting in a studio room with a low yellow overhead lamp. There are wooden cases with rows and rows of these letters stacked meticulously on the table. The palettes are mostly in a state of disrepair. Borer, weather and time have taken their toll. But the lead letter faces themselves are intact.
They were made in a foundry in 1950s. They were imported to Wellington in 1952, and they were used here in Wellington to print the Growers Journal for 20 years. They had their final issue in August 1972.
Founded by Dan Chan, the journal was the longest-running Chinese language publication in New Zealand and covered things like market news, cultivation techniques, articles, ads, and literary pieces as well.
After the paper ceased, the whole collection went to live in Lai Hong's new town home. But then, over the next 30-odd years, the collection moved from storage location to storage location, but ultimately ended up, again, through the network of the market gardeners in an onion packing shed in Pukekohe.
After passing hands, eventually, almost exactly 6 years ago, Victoria University of Wellington became the kaitiaki of this printing collection. It was an agreement with the Dominion Federation of New Zealand Chinese Commercial Growers. It was a treasure, really, that the university decided to host at its Waitea Press. Sydney Shep is a reader in book history and the printing press at Victoria University, and a letterpress printer herself. She'd been involved from the beginning when the collection was found at the onion packing shed.
It wasn't just a journal talking about the latest pesticides, the latest agricultural innovations, the latest market prices for vegetables. It was much more. It had language classes in it. It had features about well-known and very interesting personalities. Mm-hmm. It had, at the beginning, international news. Every Chinese household was said to have a copy of the Grower's Journal. Wow. It became really a kind of artifact around which the community could congregate and feel like they had a sense of belonging, a sense of identity, and a future for them in a country which predominantly regarded the Chinese as, yes, they were here for the gold mining, but didn't understand that the story was far deeper and far greater, and that the community had contributed far more to Aotearoa New Zealand than what had been acknowledged in the past.
But before the whole collection came to Victoria University in September 2016, Sydney first received the intact type that was found for the final issue of the journal to be preserved and displayed at Waitea Press. And sometime in 2013, Yawen came to the press as an intern.
So I saw this when I was doing an internship here at Waitea Press. And I saw that I was able to read it. I have a particular connection to full form because I was born in Taipei, and all of my Chinese language learning has been through full form.
So I felt, how do you mean full form?
Well, if you were to enroll in a Chinese language course here at Vic now, your textbooks and what you're learnt, what you're taught to read and write, would be in simplified form. And there are still particular pockets of the sort of Chinese-speaking world that uses full form. Taiwan is one of those places. So when I saw this, there was a real sense of like, oh, a little piece of home, very far away from home. How do I connect to this? Mm-hmm. So I told Sydney, hey, if you ever, you know, if there's ever a project around this, I'd love to know. And then this arrived, and Sydney was like, hey, the type's here. And at that point, I left my job in Auckland and I relocated to Wellington to work on this.
And that's a lot of work. The collection's made of over 300,000 pieces and has about 9 font variations and 3 character typefaces. Like typesetting in any language, each of these pieces are arranged to make words, sentences and paragraphs. But to use these again, the whole collection needs to be transferred, organized, and cleaned of decades of debris and dust. It's not just really intricate, but can be super heavy. It's lead, after all. But still, it seems like a dream for font fiends like Yawen or Sydney.
This particular font, Kaishu, actually goes back thousands of years. Because Kaishu, or also known as regular script, actually has a calligraphic tradition, though these particular pieces of Kaishu are rendered in metal and in letterpress, they actually still contain that connection to the human hand. Whereas if you look at the other fonts, for example, the one below it, that is Songti, this one here,
Yeah. You
can see how all the lines are much more angular, much more straight.
There's a sharpness to it that you don't quite see.
There's a sharpness to it that you don't see in the first.
Yeah.
And that's because Songti comes from woodblock printing of books. So that follows the marks made by the chisel when people are carving into wood. Whereas Kaishu still has the marks of someone writing with a brush on paper. I think what fascinated us about Kaishu is that newspapers of that period in the 1950s, 1970s, it was conventional to set them in Songti.
Such an interesting decision by the first editor of the Growers' Journal to actually set his newspaper in Kaishu, not the usual Songti.
So what do you think drove that decision?
I mean, based on what I have heard about the founding editor, Dan Chan, out of the various typefaces this Hong Kong foundry offered, Kaishu was the one probably most aligned with the humanistic, you know, the literary person. It's the one that has the most, I guess, traditional underpinnings. And I think that appealed to him greatly because he himself was a reader and enjoyer of literature and calligraphy. And so I think that's why Kaishu appealed to him.
To help with this mammoth task of organizing and cleaning the collection, the studio now runs weekly volunteer sessions, and it seems to be working.
It's usually, you know, quite chill. We're all amongst friends. Yeah, if new people come, they, you know, we introduce ourselves to each other. If you're coming for the first time, I'll talk you through the tasks at hand. It's a very meditative process. So the way you navigate around a case is, we have a map, thank goodness. We have a type ordering catalog and we follow that map.
That's a lot to get through, right? So what kind of volumes are we looking at here? I mean, each palette, is there a count in terms of how many they actually are?
So there are 2 designs of the type case.
Yeah.
One for the headline type and one for the body type. The body type, you're looking at 280 compartments in a case, and you can fit up to 40 in one compartment.
Wow.
You're looking at several thousand per case. you can see, even just taking a visual scan of the room, so we have four type cases out, and we have several headline cases, but that one there is a body case. So you're able to see that that volunteer was a really, you know, they were up for the challenge.
Yeah.
September traditionally is a busy month here at the studio. There's the Chinese Language Week and the Moon Festival coming up, and both are literally marked on print here.
At least twice a year, we will do typesetting with these heritage pieces of type for Lunar New Year and for the Moon Festival, which also helps us mark the anniversary of the arrival of the types. So at least twice a year, there will be something special being printed with the type.
But it's extra busy these days now that Yawen and Sydney Shep have been preparing for an upcoming exhibition that coincides with Language Week this year. It's called The Voice of Kaishu, a typographic journey, and is supported by the Ministry of Culture in Taiwan.
The Spotlight Taiwan program that they sponsor, which is an international program to enable people to appreciate what Taiwan is, its cultural legacy, but also more specifically, how it relates to other parts of the world. So in addition to an exhibition, we've got public programs, we've got workshops, mm-hmm. ways of telling the story and to educate people around the beauties of this particular Kaishu family mm-hmm. and what that means in terms of our understanding of typographic history, mm-hmm. our understanding of Wellington signage, our understanding of the everyday use of type, and what type actually means, its expressive qualities.
The exhibition starts 14th September at Victoria University's Waitayata Press.
We very much believe that the legacy of this collection lives on through use, and that's the vision of what we're trying to do with the Scholar Studio. We want to set that up so everything is ready for the community to come in and actually use this collection to print things that are special to them.
Big thanks to Yawen Ho and Sydney Shep at Waitayata Press. To see photos and videos of the collection and the studio, check out Voices on the RNZ website and find us on social media too, Instagram and Facebook as RNZ_Voices. And yep, we're also on all your favourite podcast platforms too, Apple, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Today's episode was mixed by Jeremy Ansel, and I'm your producer and host every week on Voices, Kadambri Raghukumar. Thanks for listening.